We go shopping in Benson, at the Benson Walmart. Now, there's a Walmart in town on Kolb and 22nd Street or something like that. But it, believe it or not, is quicker for us to go to the Benson Walmart than it is to go to 22nd Street and Kolb. And it's just a nicer store. There are nicer people. I hope nobody here works at that Walmart. I guess I should have checked that beforehand. Well, if you do, you're an anomaly. But it's just a really nice, it's a nice drive. You can just put it on cruise control and drive all the way to milepost 301 or whatever it is and get off at the Walmart and shop. Now, I do this trip every once in a while, and sometimes I do it by myself. And when you get to about milepost 286, if you do this drive, start looking around, okay? Because there is, believe it or not, a flock of bald eagles that live in that area. And the most amazing thing that you will ever see is to drive down I-10 and see a bald eagle kind of fly with you and then take off. It is an absolutely stunning sight. This happened to me about 2 months ago, or now maybe about 6 months ago. And I saw this, and I was so excited about it. And I came back, and I told Jennifer, I saw a bald eagle. And she's like, I didn't see it. I don't believe it happened. No, it was a bald eagle. You could see the white and the wings. It was big. It was huge. It was beautiful. Nope, I didn't see it. Didn't happen. I was so frustrated. But she does that to me sometimes. Well, so I thought it was an anomaly. I said, well, this can't possibly be happening. I mean, maybe she's right. Maybe there are no bald eagles living in southern Arizona. Even though if you get on, you know, the internet, you'll find out that there are bald eagles living in Arizona. So 2 weeks ago, I was driving to Benson Walmart, and sure enough, I saw another one of these bald eagles, beautiful bald eagle, fly down. And this time, as I was driving, he was almost like flying over the car, almost like a gift from God to say, tell her that that didn't happen, okay? So I am so excited. I get to Walmart. I do my shopping. I rush home. I tell Jennifer, I saw another bald eagle. It was beautiful. I didn't see it. I don't believe it happened. Sometimes you just really take the wind out of my sails. She is a doubting Thomas like I have never met before. But our story today is about doubting Thomas. Now, we're going through the rest of the story. We're looking at the stuff that happens in the Gospel of John after the resurrection of Jesus. And the whole purpose of that is to solidify in the disciples' minds, to solidify in your minds, what happened after Jesus rose from the dead. And today we're going to come across a guy named Doubting Thomas. And I just want you to think about this today because this is a very, very interesting story. It's an extremely interesting story, and I think it is very, very helpful for us today in our culture. So we're just going to start in at Doubting Thomas, Doubting Jennifer. There really was a bald eagle. We're going to start at verse 24. Now you'll remember last week that the disciples had seen Jesus. Jesus arose, and that first day of the week, he appeared to them, and then he left again. And those disciples told Thomas, because apparently Thomas wasn't there. So beginning in verse 24, now Thomas called Didymus, one of the 12, was not with the disciples when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, we've seen the Lord. But he said to them, well, unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand into his side, I will not believe it. Listen to that again. He said to them, unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my fingers where his nails were, unless I do those two things, I simply will not believe it. Now, I want to talk a little bit today about science versus religion, because that is a big topic in our world today, in our postmodern world. We are trained to believe things that we see, believe things that we can touch. And it is not strange for us at all to be able to say, well, I can understand perfectly where Thomas is coming from. He wants to see the proof of the resurrection. He's just not going to take it from anybody else. And so he is there, and he's telling the disciples, I'm not going to believe unless I can do these two things. And the disciples are like, no, you got to believe, you got to believe. He says, I'm not going to believe unless I can touch him and put my hands in his side. And we can see that because we are living in an age, a modern world, where science rules supreme, doesn't it? All of you live in the modern age where science is everything, where science has almost become a god in and of itself. But there are problems, even in today, with science. Science isn't as pure as you may think it is. As you may have known, I worked in the realm of science for a long time, and I consider myself to be a very reasonably intelligent, even though you may disagree, even though my wife may completely disagree, that I a reasonably intelligent, scientific, studying mind. And it amazes me to see some of the fallacies that people are making in science today and some of the claims that they're making about science that simply aren't true. And I want to go through some of those claims with you today because the truth is that there are some misconceptions about the role and what science can do in our lives. And the first one is this, that our scientific knowledge is true and accurate. That our scientific knowledge is true and accurate. Think about that for a second. We use science to predict the weather, don't we? And yet, how many times is the weather wrong? Think about that. And yet we say, well, of course, you know, we've got this model, we've built this model, we put all these inputs into it, it's saying that we're going to have rain tomorrow, so there'll be rain tomorrow. And the next day, it's bright and sunny. Science is not always true and accurate. You may remember, or maybe you don't know this, but in the Middle Ages, when they wanted to heal people, they would take mercury, and they would rub it in the wounds. And now, mercury is a pretty dangerous substance. You don't even want that close to you. But they would rub it in the wounds, you know, of people, and it would infect and get all terrible and turn different colors. And they're saying, wow, look, it's pulling out that infection. You know, that's good. They had no idea. They had absolutely no idea. And even as recent as a couple hundred years ago, some of the medical practices that they used to do were just crazy. Like taking leeches and putting it on your body to suck out the germs and stuff like that. I mean, we think that we've got all the answers with science, but the truth is that it is not necessarily accurate and complete. There is still a wide vastness of science out there that has yet to been discovered, and it changes all the time. Another of the misconceptions about science is that there is a scientific answer for everything. That there is a scientific answer for everything. I was, in preparing for the sermon, I went back and looked again a presentation by Stephen Hawking. Now, I don't know if you know who Stephen Hawking is, but he is this brilliant man who thinks big thoughts, and he's in a wheelchair. And he was giving a presentation in Berkeley about the Big Bang Theory. And before the Big Bang Theory, everybody thought that kind of science, that the world kind of went on for eternity. And that causes problems for scientific minds, because nothing really goes on for eternity. Eternity is a very difficult concept. And so Hubble discovered, a number of years ago, looking through the Hubble telescope, he discovered that the galaxies are actually going away at a constant speed. And they found other microwaves coming to the Earth. And what they found out is that the galaxy all kind of began at a certain point called what they call the Big Bang. And we Christians are like, yes, Big Bang, we like that. Because what do we call the Big Bang? Creation, absolutely. And so there is proof that there was creation, and we're strutting around saying we know what we're doing. But people like Stephen Hawking, they don't like that. Because they don't want to point to things like God and creation and things like that. And so they're in this lecture, he's trying to figure out a way to explain the Big Bang in scientific equations. And so he gives this lecture, and this is what he says at the end of it. And by the way, it's a fascinating lecture. And he says this at the conclusion of his lecture. I now think I can show how the universe was spontaneously created out of nothing, according to the laws of science, the universe exists. Now, this is the key statement to Hawking's. The universe exists because general relativity and quantum theory allow and require it to exist. If I'm right, the universe is self-contained and governed by science alone. In time, we can hope to understand it completely. We have long enough, as the universe should last forever. So what Hawkins is saying here is that the universe exists because the laws that govern nature force it to exist. And he says, and that's proof enough that there's no God. And I'm watching this lecture and I'm saying, well, who created these forces that said that the universe had to exist the way it's existing? Folks, there is no way that science can answer every question, no matter how hard they try. They can't answer it. And the last one is this, and this is the one that I think probably hits home to all of us, and it's this, that faith and science are polar opposites, and where one exists, the other can't exist. Do you understand that? So if it's all science, there's no room for faith, and if you have faith, then you obviously have no room for science. And that's what people talk about today, is the fact that faith and science are polar opposites. And as a matter of fact, it has become so pernicious in our society that I hate to say this, but it's almost come like a form of fascism that says you've got to believe in science and understand all the tenets of science or you're just not an intelligent human being. And if you get on some of these websites and look at it, there are people that will tell you that if you believe in creation, you're an idiot. You've got to believe in Darwinian evolution. But the fact is, if you look at Darwinian evolution, it has changed dramatically since it was proposed by Darwin 100 years ago. Dramatically. As a matter of fact, nothing about it has held firm, and they've had to revise it and revise it and revise it over time. And I've looked at this stuff. If you look at all the fossil records that make up the whole theory of evolution, it would fit in a box about 2 foot by 2 foot by this high. There is not a lot of evidence there, and yet they have created a whole entire system, and if you don't believe in that system, then you're just not an intelligent person. And I know you know this because you've struggled with this. All of you struggle with this. The other one was just amazing to me. A lady got on the website, and she was talking about the Big Bang Theory. And apparently, if you do not subscribe to the Big Bang Theory as proposed by Hawking's, you do not get any funding whatsoever. Period. And you'll remember that movie that came out about a year ago called Expelled with Ben Stein. And he said, that he documented people who have lost their jobs, been kicked out because they've held faith over science, or at least on the same level of science. And so you got to be, this has to affect you because it affects me. Am I supposed to believe in faith? Or am I supposed to be in science? And how are the two supposed to intermingle? And I don't understand. And I don't want to be called an idiot. I want to understand science to the point that I can, but I also want to believe in God. What am I supposed to do? And the fact is that our gospel lesson here from today from Thomas. Because Thomas was the first skeptic. Thomas was the first scientist. He says, I'm not going to believe it unless you show it to me. So what happened? Jesus showed him. Later on that day, a week later actually, beginning of verse 26, a week later, his disciples were in the house again. And this time Thomas was with them. And though the doors were locked, which was interesting, Jesus came and stood among them, and he said, "Peace be with you." And then he looked at Thomas and said to Thomas, put your finger here, and see my hands. Reach out your hand and put it to my side. Stop doubting and believe." And Thomas said to him, "My Lord and my God." The first skeptic. And Jesus came right up to him and said, "Here, see, because it is so important for you to understand that I have been raised from the dead." And Thomas came in, he put his hands and finger and saw that it really was him and said, "My Lord and my God." But that is not the end of the story, because Jesus goes on. And then Thomas said to him, "My Lord and my God." But then Jesus told him, "Because you have seen me, you have believed. But blessed are those who have not seen and yet believed." Let those words sink in just a little bit. You've seen and you've believed, but blessed are those who will not see what you've seen, and yet they will believe. And who is he talking about, Jesus? He's talking about us, isn't he? And what Jesus is saying is, blessed are us for having not seen and yet believed in the resurrection. There's two things that come out of this text this morning. First is this: our faith is not a function of mathematical models. What Jesus is telling Thomas is that you are the last person. The people around me now are going to be seeing me, but then everybody else is going to have to go by faith. There are not going to be any more direct revelations where I stand in front of people and show them. It's going to have to be faith, which means that all of us come not because of scientific knowledge. We become Christians because of faith, without proof, without physical hard scientific proof. There are no mathematical models. Think about it. And the second one is this: our faith is not a function of a particular mathematical model. All the mathematical models are a specific worldview to explain the events that happened inside our universe. And if those events turn towards a mathematical model that may seem different than what you may believe or what you may read, understand that it is just a mathematical model. The message of the resurrection is that Jesus Christ broke mathematical models. He rose from the dead. How's that for breaking a mathematical model? I mean, science and religion are not on the same plane when it comes to Jesus Christ. He breaks through those things. That's what faith is all about. So if the universe, if the pointy-headed, propeller-headed people can tell us that it's all this way and we've got it all laid out and that's the way it is, fine. God is perfectly able to go and do it the way he wants to do. That's the whole message of the resurrection, isn't it? There is no mathematical model that's going to prove to you that Jesus Christ rose from the dead. It all comes from faith. And faith is what God gives you. Faith that builds and is strong and gets stronger and stronger. And pretty soon your faith is stronger than any mathematical model. This last week, I was sitting outside with my parents. And we saw a spectacular, phenomenal event. I have no idea what it was. It was a big, huge, bright, falling star that was bigger than I've ever seen. It actually came into the atmosphere and landed on the other side of Rincon Peak. And I turned to my parents, "Did you see that?" And they looked, "What was that? I have no idea. Did we really see what we were thinking we were seeing? Let's get Jennifer out here." "Nope." I mean, what we see with our eyes, what we hear with our ears, is it really true? I mean, when I see something like that with my parents, I believe it now. I mean, it's as clear as day. It was only 2 or 3 days ago. But in 20 years or 30 years, did I really see it? I'm not sure. But faith operates on a totally different plane from mathematical models. Faith is a relationship that you have with Jesus Christ, and it gets stronger and stronger every day. And it is a faith that he gives you, and it is just the right amount of faith to believe in him and believe that he rose from the dead. And that's the true Easter story, and that's the story from Thomas. In Jesus' name, amen.